Hello, and welcome to our special series of Green Elephant interviews during March 2021, supporting the annual B Corps month. B Corporations, or B Corps for short, are businesses that meet the highest standards of verified social and environmental performance, public transparency, and legal accountability to balance profit and purpose. Throughout March, we are chatting with key people in companies which have chosen to certify as B Corps and become a force for good. Right. So today I've been joined by Mark Sapsford and James Pugh from CapEQ. CapEQ are an ethical research-led mergers and acquisitions boutique, which delivers advice to Europe's leading business owners, shareholders, and entrepreneurs. They can help sell your business, buy other businesses, or develop your strategic plan. Launched in July 2020, CapEQ is a pending B Corporation. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And a well-placed to explain the first-time assessment process. They will be the first European M&A practice B Corp. So that's great. Mark, good morning, Mark.
Morning, Mike, and how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Mark is co-founder of CapEQ, experienced M&A professional, and has negotiated lots of transactions and is a friend to hundreds of entrepreneurs. We also have James. Morning, James.
Morning, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm good. And is the other co-founder. You can't have one co-founder, can you, I guess? he's got a banking and finance background, and I'm glad, as I said, we got the whole founder with two of you here. So when I hear mergers and acquisitions, I quite often think Pretty Woman. So I was wondering which one of you is Richard Gere and which is Julia Roberts?
Mark looks best in a skirt, I can definitely tell you that. It's got legs for it, that's all I can say.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we mentioned M&A boutique, and that's what you call yourselves. Do you want to tell us more about what that is?
James, do you want to have a go?
So, Russell, in our industry, there's lots of buzzwords. So let me give you a really basic overview. We help clients find the right exit for their business. Okay. So if a shareholder has owned a business and wants to work out where he goes next, we will help them by giving them advice and by actually leading a transaction to get them where they need to be. And that could be anything from selling to a new trade owner through to an employee ownership trust, where the employees take over the business and everything in between. We also spend a lot of time helping people with acquiring other businesses. So that's quite a big part of our job. And we also spend a lot of time advising people on a strategic basis of, you know, if they're here and they want to get to there, how do they do that? And can we help them do that? So we spend most of our time, typically with shareholders making between £500,000 and £6 or £7 million of profit across Europe.
Okay, and that's a really interesting area. We're here in B Corp month talking to B Corps, and you wouldn't necessarily associate B Corps, which is, you know, being a force for good and people and planet being important, with what you've just described, which is kind of quite a financial profit-based transaction. So I guess, Mark, do you have a view on how that fits and how that works?
Yeah, and I think, and just to overlay what James said, it's he or she. We with a lot of women business owners as well as male owners. But I think the key to this is look, at the end of the day, the thing that we come across time and time again is where business owners set up a business, the business grows rapidly. And they find themselves with an entity either far bigger than they thought they were ever going to grow, or they get to some point in their life that they decide that they want to get the future correct for the business. And we often find the old analogy of owners become business owners and they become managers of businesses. And then all of a sudden they lose the emphasis of the business. They're more of a manager than they are the founder and growing and doing all the lovely things that they enjoyed when they started the business. Yeah. So often it is a responsibility of owners to think about what the future holds for that business and finding the right home and what that next growth and that next strategy is for the business. So that's where we see our role coming in of assisting, you know, any organization to go on to that next level. And it may be that, you know, we all have skills that we can take businesses to certain levels. And then there's another skill set that is required to then go on and grow. So
I guess that's, that's why you see the likes of Facebook and Google, the founders, the Zuckerbergs and the Eric Schmidts and Sergey Brins of the world. They kind of move and they bring in a head of operations or somebody to actually manage the day-to-day running of the company, isn't it? And because
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's key that, you know, as a business owner, you understand your limitations and you understand that actually it's no disrespect to where you've got to. You've got to this stage. Well, okay, now you've got a responsibility for all the people that you employ to do the right thing and to go on and make that business grow. And that may be selling it. It may be finding a strategic partner to help and assist you go on to that next level. But ultimately, it is understanding the market and being aware of a market is incredibly important for a business owner. And it's a responsible way to take a business on a day-to-day basis of understanding where you fit in the market.
So would you say that your approach to mergers and acquisitions is kind of people first and business first, rather than looking at, you know, shareholder return and value for the founder, so to speak?
Russell, you asked a little while ago where, you know, you raised a question about M&A and sustainability and impact going together. And it's an interesting one. I think that's probably true that in our industry, that is true, that ethics and sustainability aren't discussed. They're not part of the everyday conversation. And it's an industry which is worth, you know, millions, if not billions, around the world. And some of the biggest transactions will have M&A professionals or investment bankers on them. And it is an industry that doesn't always have the best reputation and unfortunately deservedly so sometimes. And we spent the past decade, or at least the past decade, both working together in M&A and have seen some of the practices that have gone on that we're not happy about. And we work an awful lot with what we would call sustainable impact businesses. And when we sat on a cricket pitch on a hot summer's day last year and trying to work out what we could do, one of the things that was key to us was we wanted to treat our clients as people first off, so see what's right for our client. And what I think most people assume is that most of our clients are in it for the money. And actually, whilst clearly money is important, it's a reward for their hard work, very few of them are only in it just for the money. Most of them, the vast majority of our clients, are always looking to nurture the staff, nurture the clients, nurture the people who've made their business. And that's an area that as we were probably restricted from really supporting when we were in our previous roles. So that was one area, the people of how can we how can we support the people, how can we support our own staff who often get treated like commodities, and they're not, you know, they work incredibly hard and therefore need looking after. And the other side is that our industry is one that no one thinks twice about hopping on a plane and going to see a client. To be honest, some don't think about hopping on a plane and going at coffee in Italy. So, there's that needs to change. And that was the other piece for us was, okay, you know, if we're going to treat people ethically and our clients ethically, at the same time, what can we do to reduce our impact on the planet and, you know, reducing travel, reducing energy consumption and supporting the transactions that we do? The complexity is that it's not necessarily black and white about whether you should or shouldn't support a transaction. So the B Corporation, for example, the movement that really sums up our ethos, doesn't necessarily restrict. So it doesn't, you know, for example, BrewDog is a B Corporation.
Yes.
It's not producing alcohol. It's not well known as being the most ethical of products, alcohol. It's a drug. And the same thing, you know, they take stances on weapons. So it's not necessarily exclusive, but it is a case of, okay, what can we do to make sure things are dealt with properly and move things forward in a positive way as possible?
Yeah. So you mentioned the sort of the middle of last year sitting on a sunny cricket pitch, which sounds in the middle of lockdown, sounds an absolute heaven at this stage.
Obviously suitably separated.
Yes, of course. But what was it, you know, at that particular point that brought you to form Cap EQ? Was it purely the kind of sustainability angle? Were you restricted from doing all these things in your former roles? What was it that kind of brought about Cap EQ?
Yeah, and a really good question. I think ultimately where we spun out of a larger M&A practice, and our decision then was, well, what do we want to do? How do we want to make our mark and really show we're never looking for an ethical banner. Let's put it that way. I think for both of us, both James and I, it was always about helping assisting companies a lot earlier in their phasing, because at the where we worked before, it was at the last minute, in the last probably 2 months of a decision process for business owners to sell, and then expected to then take them through a process that would take 8 to 10 months. And for us, it was like, no, that journey needs to start early. That journey needs to start 2 years, whatever it is, to get to know that business, to help and to shape the business, and to make sure we're doing the right thing, not only for the business owner, but for the business to then get ready to go. And that way you can go on and transition. So I think it was a meeting of moments in time that just said, actually, this is what we need to do. And then James brought the B Corp element up, and it was like, actually, that actually works with us. As I said, we weren't looking for the ethical banner that goes over the top of our heads, but it is ultimately what we believe in and what we've always believed in. And then B Corp just goes over the top of it, which is incredible.
Yeah, certainly from my experience of having been involved in takeovers and acquisitions, and uniformly, I think when a large company is taking over, acquiring, merging with another company, it's the people that suffer, and people just get 3 months' notice, and this has happened, and you're out the door. And it seems that the standard approach is to take no account of the people. And so your approach is, I would suggest, a breath of fresh air in this kind of space. Yeah. And what are the kind of the hot kind of potatoes in mergers and acquisitions at the moment? Is there a move towards, as we're seeing, another ESG and kind of more sustainable reporting? There's been a lot of news we've seen about growing interest in that from a kind of a finance and investment point of view. Is that the case in the M&A space as well?
I mean, it's interesting. So the M&A, there's a presumption that when COVID happened, the lockdowns happened, the M&A has stopped because who's going to be buying businesses? It's not what's happened at all. There's more funds available for anything else. And actually, there is a bigger push for sustainability coming from all sorts of places. And that's starting to be, so you're starting to see questionnaires on ESG as part of due diligence when one company acquires another company, which you didn't see 10 years ago. There might have been a touch on environmental, but it was more about environmental risk and you might get sued rather than true ESG concerns. Sure. And you are seeing some more money come in from that space, and certainly that's starting to drive activity. Would I say it's a key driver? I don't think either Mark and I would say it's the biggest piece. What you are seeing, though, so you roll back five, six, seven, 8 years ago, private equity has been massively busy in the M&A space and is driving a huge amount of M&A activity. And private equity has a bad reputation, or a mixed reputation, would be fair to say. But what you're seeing is a lot more private equity funds who are specifically focused on the ESG and the impact space. And that's a really nice thing to see. And it started, you know, there were a couple of years back, we got introduced to one by a company called Bridges Ventures, who is another B Corporation, who acquired one of our clients who was a vegetarian foods supplier. So, you know, and typically, you know, our client was a lovely guy, was a Green Party councillor on the South Coast. And when we said, oh, you should try to sell to private equity, he said, oh, no, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. I would never talk to them. But, it turned out that they were the right partner for him. Mm. And I think that's what we're starting to see, is that focus from certain places on those certain sectors, where they can measure the impact that their investments are having.
No, it's a good trend. And, you know, we do a new show every week on the Green Elephant Show. And every week there's a story about big companies, small companies, funds moving in this direction. And I think we had one last week about mandatory environmental reporting and the International Accounting Association saying in 150 countries, we're now going to say you have to do this kind of stuff. So I'm interested in sustainability is a really broad thing, and it encompasses all sorts of areas. And I'm wondering how you kind of deal with that or split it up within the activities you're doing, because it's so big. Or I mean, does one of you take responsibility for sustainability issues and the other one, or do you split it up, or how do you address that?
No, I think it's across the board, we all take responsibility. I think our industry is renowned for printing a huge amount of content albeit whether it be on the promotional side, but also when you're working with clients, there's a lot of documentation that is moving back and forwards all the time.
Yeah.
And in the actual fact, I think if you probably go back when I first started in M&A, you would think that, you know, 15, 20 trees have been cut down at the final phase, the actual final day of the completion, a sale and purchase agreement would fill a very, very large meeting room.
Yeah.
And there'll be swathes of paper. And literally in 7 or 8 years, in the last 7 or 8 years, that technology has moved on significantly. And I would say in the last probably 8 months, that technology has moved on another level.
Yeah.
That enables us to actually work completely with virtual documents moving backwards and forwards, electronic documents, that is enabling all of the team to be aware of what the movement in the document is, everyone yep. to be working on the same document at the same time. So it enables us to move and not print anywhere. Well, in fact, I don't think we printed anything off in the last 8 months. So the ability to move documentation, the ability to adapt has been significant in our industry.
And are you finding that the legal profession are moving away from wet signature? Because we've found that as much as you might move digital documents around, at the point when it needs to be signed, digital signing can be proved absolutely, but the lawyers still want a wet signature on a piece of paper. And is that something you're finding still?
Well, it's mixed. It's certainly changing. I mean, for example, we use a e-signing for non-disclosure agreements.
Yep.
So, and absolutely, and it works really, especially in the current environment, it works really well.
Yeah, yeah.
There's certainly some lawyers who are moving that way. And as Mark says, you know, you used to see, and I've got photos of a massive table that would be 10 meters long with thousands of documents over it. And you are starting to see them come away from that. Is that changing as quickly as you might like? I think the answer is probably no. Mm. But as you start to see, companies make inroads into starting, like ourselves, starting to use e-documents, you do start to see this shift. It is an industry that is very slow to change. It doesn't yeah. like change. You know, even you look at the big, I was on a technology call not so long ago with some of the biggest investment banks, and they were asking what technology they used. And as a rule, they all said Excel. And that was it. So, you know, and they're not paperless, and they're not, whereas yep. everything we do is entirely paperless. And I was quite surprised to find that we were significantly further ahead as with technology. But actually, Russell, Mike, that goes back to your point of view on your question about who has responsibility for sustainability.
Yes.
For us, and I think this probably is the way it has to work, it's baked into the business plan. So the whole perspective of our business is set up in such a way that we are trying to be de facto sustainable at our roots. We don't yeah. have to be sustainable yeah. because no one has to choose to be, because, you know, we are a paperless office. We
and don't I, travel. And I guess that comes on to my next sort of point, really, is that, you know, B Corps and why become a B Corp? Why become a pending B Corp? And I guess you've started to answer that in that previous comment, really.
I mean, the B Corp movement's brilliant. It's really just, and we are total evangelists for it. Mm. So if you take, and you can, I can get my high horse on this, both of us can, so apologies if we go off on one, Mike.
No apologies needed here.
So, okay, place to do it. So look, I, you know, capitalism at the moment gets a bit of a bad rap, okay? Yeah. There's an awful noise. However, you look at it one way, and capitalism is the most positive influence the world has ever seen, that humankind has ever seen. It's improved, it can improve the life outcomes of people materially over just a massive amount. But it's not without its problems. You know, the capitalism based on having a market that's perfectly knowledgeable. So it presumes that everyone makes a rational decision in full knowledge of all facts. And actually, that's not reality. We don't all make it. So the question then becomes, okay, so how do you change capitalism? And for us, making a profit is not a dirty word. You know, you need to make profit because it reflects hard work. And hard work is not a bad thing. But it does mean, for us, it was absolutely critical that if you make a profit, it should be good. It should be aiding everybody. It should be aiding your staff, should be aiding your clients, should be aiding people you don't even know. There's no reason why it shouldn't be for the greater good, absolutely, yeah. And it should make a positive change, and that's where capitalism started. Actually, it started making. And you look at Sunlight Village up in Liverpool, where he built beautiful houses for all his staff, and that was the positive side yeah. of capitalism, in complete contrast to some of the horrific mills at the same time. So you look at history, and history is a good view of where can he get to? And the B Corp is a part of that movement, is looking after people. And if you can't, if consumers can't make a decision about, or can't influence easily the outcomes of the people they're purchasing from, then the onus needs to come back onto the people who make the decisions as the owners of those businesses to be positive. And that's what B Corp does. It makes an, it puts an onus on Mark and I as owners of a business, yeah, to make decisions for the positive, to the positive of the world rather than just our own pockets.
Absolutely does. And so you're currently B Corp pending. I mean, Mark, do you want to talk us through your thinking, your process, where you are in that process, and I guess maybe what B Corp pending is, because some listeners may not know the difference between pending and certified.
Yeah, absolutely. So the process to become a B Corp pending is that you've got to look at your business from literally ground up, looking at all of your processes that you abide by, you know, mixed diversity, who do you employ, what type of employee have you got? If you're using subcontractors, do you pay them above minimum wage? And it's basically just having a corporate governance, basically. And you have to get over some certain thresholds to be able to become a B Corp pending once you've submitted. And that's not an easy thing to go through. And I think everyone says the same. You know, the amount of due diligence you've got to put in place. And it's probably, yeah, a little bit harder as well for when you're setting up an organization, because it forces you to think about where you're not, where you are today, but where you're going to be in 1 year or 2 years or, yeah, 3 years. And it'll have a distinct impact. So changing, you know, setting up a limited business, but changing our articles of association straight away, that gives 10% of our profits to our staff, that basically literally how we set up the organization had to be changed. So going through that process took us probably 10 weeks, I think, of going through some heavy lifting without doing everything else associated with setting up a business. Going through that process, submitted our application, B Corp then come back and said, okay, we're going to make you pending, and you go pending for 1 year. And what it is basically they assess you in that year to see, okay, you've put all these things in place. How has that developed? And then after 1 year, they come back, or they come back in between, but predominantly come back 1 year later and then go, right, you said you were going to do these things. Where have you got to? Where are the processes? Where's the documentation that says you are doing these key points? And then you become a certified B Corp. So basically it just is, you're in a transition period. You've done the hard work, but the hard work doesn't stop. It's sustained every year from there on out, but it's just a way of just making sure that you deliver what you said you're going to do in that year.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you said, and it absolutely outlines the point that you've got to want to do it, because it's not easy, and it's not a tick box. And I think that's important for listeners to understand. B Corps have actually done the work and put in the efforts to become a B Corp. It's not a simple tick the box and you're done. And how straightforward have you found going through the process of doing that? Because you've outlined what it is really nicely and succinctly. How have you found doing it? Has it been okay, really tough?
Interesting enough, I suppose we come from it from a slight advantage, because we've worked with so many businesses around the world. So you learn about so many different industries. So I think we come at it from an angle of, okay, how's this going to work for us? I think there were some distinct challenges that we both, and there were several questions in there that probably took us probably 2 days to process in our mind. What does that actually mean? What are we, because if you answer the question in a specific way, it means you structurally change the outlook of your business. Yeah. And what are the challenges that will bring, and what does that mean to us? Do we agree with that, or do we? And I think it was challenging. And there are points in there that you could just tick a box and go, yeah, okay, I'll go with this answer and I'll deal with it in a year. But I think it really makes you stand still and go, actually, I can't move past this question until we've really thought about it, yeah, because it's really challenging, and it really makes you think. And I think that's the great thing about the process that we went through, because it challenged not only what we our perception, but it also challenges that our thought processes and what our business wants to look like in 3, 5, 10 years time. So I think it was incredibly good.
Yeah, it's a foundational, isn't it? So James, what do you think is the value? Can you put your finger on what it is that you go through all this effort, do all this work to become a B Corp? What does it bring to Cap EQ being a B Corp? What do you think the value is?
Really interesting question, Mike. We haven't yet looked at it on a value proposition, I don't know if you mean on a return on investment basis, on a financial basis, or a general ethical basis. I mean, so as Mark said earlier, for us, the B Corp was not a means to an end. It was perhaps a flag to the end, if that makes sense. It was there were things in there that we would have done anyway.
Yep.
So and there are some things that helped us clarify, as Mark was saying, what we should have done. So the value in respect of, intrinsically, it certainly had intrinsic value, and it certainly helped us change the way we look at our business, albeit we were, a chunk of the way there. And I suspect for most B Corps, they're already there anyway. It just helps them to codify and clarify.
Enshrines what they're already doing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. In terms of, however, there is most definitely a tangible benefit, and it is tangible. For a start, it does put a flag above your door. This is who we are. This is what we believe. And that's not changing. And that's a really good flag that other people start to hear about and people know about. Danone, Ben & Jerry's, Tony Chocolonely. There's some really big companies out there that are B Corps. Jamie Oliver's, one of his businesses, becoming B Corp. They're about to announce a couple of really big ones as well. So, there's some really exciting stuff going on. But what it does, it puts you in a community of people who think in a similar way, which is always helpful. And B, it puts a flag above your door. And C, it resonates. And it really resonates at the moment. And I'm sure there's some people who it doesn't resonate with, but we're yet to find someone.
Absolutely.
Potential suppliers, all of that. They're just, people are like, okay, great. We can get behind that.
Yeah. And the B Corp community is amazing. I mean, as these series of interviews are proving, I mean, some of the names that you mentioned there, we are, if not confirmed interviewing, hoping to interview as part of this. And the community just wants to help others in the community. So that's, incredibly strong. So you're a B Corp, you're pending. And I guess for you, you're kind of going through that certification process. And then just for listeners, it's not a one-time thing. Once you've become B Corp certified, and we're just coming up to our annual recertification, you have to keep at it. It's not a one-time stake in the ground. It's an ongoing, and the standards change and they get more rigorous and you have to work harder to achieve the score. So it's an incredibly valuable thing to do. We could talk for an awful long time about B Corps and M&As and stuff, but I think that gives listeners a flavour. If listeners want to find out more about yourselves or Cap EQ, where should they go? Where's the best place to sort of find you, find out more about what you're doing and link up with you?
Yeah, so we have a website, so www.capeq.co.uk.
Yep.
We are also on LinkedIn and quite prolific on LinkedIn or Twitter.
Okay.
But I think ultimately we would happily take any calls or discussions, or people want any advice on, they find themselves with a family business or whatever kind of business and trying to find some advice, or, I'm thinking about in the next 2 years or 3 years, we would love to talk to anyone, happy to give them advice and steer them in the right direction. And as you'll see on the website and anything that we put out on Twitter and LinkedIn is just advice and thought provoking on these are the things you may need to think about.
Yeah.
And happily talk to anyone.
That's great. And I guess from what we've said earlier in the comment, the sooner they start that conversation, the better, I guess, James.
Yeah, no, Mike, that's absolutely the case. And what you find with business owners is that they are so busy running businesses that they don't often take time to step back and look at the wood. That they're so busy focusing on the trees. And actually, what we do is use some of our experience, which is probably well, it's hundreds of client interactions over the years, to help them see where they could get to and what actually is the right, what is the realm of possibility. And most people don't really understand the realm of possibility open to those business owners. And some of the possibilities are really exciting and really make a big difference to their staff and their clients without really affecting the financial reward they might get from exiting their business.
No, it all sounds amazing. And we'll put links to all those websites and social media on our show notes page so people can go and look you up. Guys, that's been brilliant. It's now time to move on to what's normally my favourite time of the week, which is Fact or Fake, where I get to challenge Russell in a challenge of wits and deceit, really, as to what sustainable facts are true or not. But I believe that...
We've turned the tables on you, Mike.
But the tables have been turned and you have some facts or fakes for me. So whenever you're ready, I'm not sure I'm ready, but whenever you're ready, please...
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll go with the first one and we'll see where we go.
So, okay.
The oldest business in England is the Royal Mint, founded in 886 AD. Fact or fiction, the oldest business in Ireland is called Sean's Bar.
Right, okay, so are we saying that banking or drinking is older? And I think
that's pretty much it.
I think on that basis, I'm going to say that Sean's Bar, as I think drinking is older than banking.
Well, there you go. Okay, so true. Sean's Bar is the oldest business in Ireland, founded in 900. Only 14. It was 14 years later than the Bank of England in the UK or the Royal Mint.
Brilliant.
So, there we go.
Yeah, I love that one.
Okay, so the second one for you, Mike, and you're doing well. So, and we're even going to have a bonus round to later on. So,
brilliant.
Okay, the Haliade X wind turbine from General Electric, 14 megawatts.
Okay.
Each rotation takes 7.8 seconds and can power an average UK home for 4 hours. Fact or fiction?
I'm thinking that is... So these 7.8 seconds is the average time taken to go around, is it?
Yeah. And I'm talking at full power. Let's presume it's
maximum power. We've got a lot of wind farms in Cornwall, and I get to watch the turbines going around quite a lot. And I think they go a bit quicker than that. So I'm going to say that's fake. I think it goes around faster, and I think possibly it gives a bit more power than that as well. So I'm going to say that's a fake.
Oh, okay, a double answer as well, Mike. I'm impressed. So actually, it generally does take 7.8 seconds because it's ginormous.
Yeah,
this thing is just 35,000 square meters is the amount of area it covers.
Wow,
and that's 5.5 rugby pitches. Seeing as we're watching Six Nations,
that's a big one.
Yeah,
and it produces so each rotation so it's 18 kilowatt hours in one rotation. And a UK house, average UK house produces 12 kilowatt hours. So each rotation will power two small houses.
That is amazing, isn't it? Per rotation.
That's just incredible.
That is awesome. I'm glad I got that wrong so I can learn that. Oh, wow.
You're looking at them a little bit closer now. When you're
I will be. But I think our ones are smaller than that one sounds.
Yeah, just a
day. Yeah.
Okay.
Go on, Mark.
In 2020... there were 1,059 businesses per 10,000 residents in the UK. It shows our country is rife with opportunities and plucky entrepreneurs. Fact or fake, 17% of these businesses were owned by women.
Oh, that's a good one. I think women are underrepresented in corporate world and boardrooms and in the sustainability space, actually. That doesn't change that 70% of our listeners are female, so they have the interest. But in terms of small business, I think it might be more heavily weighted towards women. I think women are much more get up and go and, you know, stay at home and I'm going to start a business. So I think 17% sounds low. So I'm going to say that's a fake. I think it's higher than 17%.
Yeah, good move. Okay, so it was fact up until 4 years previous. So in 2016, it actually was 17%.
Okay.
So in the past 4 years, going up to January 2020, That percentage raised from 17% to 32.7% owned by women.
Great.
So it has been the fastest growing, and long may that continue.
Yeah, yeah, good to see.
And you just raised a really interesting question, Mike, about the women in sustainability. And I wish we'd done some analysis on this, and we hadn't. But I am willing to bet that when you look at B Corps and you look at the B Corp socials, which you'll have been on, I bet it's almost 50-50, or maybe even tilted towards more women. We certainly see an awful lot of sustainability with women involved, and that's. And that's brilliant. It makes, you know, it really shows the positive power of business.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they make the buying decisions in the home generally. And so it's great to see so many women engage with the topic. And if we can get more of them owning businesses, then, you know, even better.
Which brings us nicely onto the bonus round, Mike. You've got a bonus round.
Okay.
Okay, so this is tying financials and sustainability.
Okay.
So fact or fiction, if you took all of the money invested in sustainable investment funds and you took it all out and turned it into cash, it would pay off the gross national debt of the USA.
Okay, so gross national debt of the USA. I think some of the couple. If only I had a browser available to do it quickly. I think they're probably 2 or 3 trillion, something like that. And are the funds that much? All the money invested in sustainable businesses and funds. That's a really, really tricky one. It could be. I'm going to say that's a fact. I think that's true.
Okay, so it's partially true. I have had to check this from a number of different areas because it just seems such a big number.
Yeah.
The amount of money invested in funds that will have sustainability as a key facet, so they may not purely be sustainable, but it's a key facet, is $40.8 trillion.
Wow.
If you liquidated all of that, it would pay off the gross debt of the USA and every EU country and Britain.
Wow. I mean, I'm amazed at it. So it's vastly bigger than the debt of USA, isn't it? It's huge.
It's bigger than the debt of the Western world, effectively.
Wow. I mean, it's great because obviously money is going to where perceives the opportunity to be.
And if people want to really improve if people want to really make a difference, there's tons of ways they can do it, but one of the biggest ways they can do it is to take their pensions and put it in sustainable funds. And that would make the biggest difference. There's probably some analysis you could do, but it would make a huge difference instantly.
Yeah, it's something we've touched on a couple of times briefly, and it's definitely something to have a more detailed conversation about, because you're right, it's something you can actually do rather than swapping your soap or, you know, whatever those kind of small domestic things are. It's something we definitely need to explore more and have another discussion about. But yeah, great. James, Mark, thank you for the facts of fact. They're really enlightening. Thank you for telling us about CapEQ. Again, really interesting. Listeners, go to the show page, follow the links, speak to the guys, get some help if you're at that stage in your business life cycle. And until next time, just want to say thank you so much for being part of our B Corp month. And we look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Mike, thank you. Mike, is it too late to add one more thing?
No, carry on. I haven't cut it off yet.
Well, so there might be two things we can add. So this is just about sustainability. So there's a charity called turnonthesubtitles.org that we came across last week. If you want to materially improve the literacy of your children, turn on the subtitles on the TV programme. And let's be honest, we're all stressed as parents about how much time the children are watching TV.
In screens, yeah.
And that's the first one. And Mark, do you want to take the second one in terms of emails?
So here's a sustainable action. Unsubscribing to unwanted emails. Each one of those saves 10 grams of carbon.
Yep.
So... just, you know, if you want to be sustainable, that's what you want to do.
That's a great one. We've reiterated that one a number of times. The number of pointless email that goes around, and it's worth another reminder. Just unsubscribe. You won't read it. Unsubscribe from it. Guys, thank you. I forgot to ask you for a tip, so I'm glad, James, that you kind of stopped me at the end and made us do it. But yeah, great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
We really hope that you found this special B Corp Month episode both informative and entertaining. Make sure you don't miss any of the other 31 interviews with B Corporations who are striving to be a force for good. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a thing. And don't forget to spread the word with others. If you have any questions about being or becoming a B Corp or any comments and suggestions about the show, please do get in touch. You can email studio@greenelephant.show or visit our website greenelephant.show. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube or Twitter by searching for Green Elipod or The Green Elephant Show. You can also review the show on Google and Apple Podcasts. Join us tomorrow and we hope you have a sustainable day.